everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, who should we believe and what is true or false concerning the COVID pandemic? My guest is a member of the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. She is giving a lecture in Nevada. She is Dr. Lee Merritt, M-E-R-R-I-T-T. She is a board-certified orthopedic spinal surgeon. She has a medical practice in Logan, Iowa. And in her presentation, she's discussing the geopolitical power and why it should be challenged. She's talking about cognitive dissonance and that we're facing, all of us are facing. And is the science real science there to support all the choices that our governmental agencies, the World Health Organization, Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, the White House that Trump has had and the White House that Biden now has, are these people really looking at the real science? For example, do the masks protect us to the degree that we are led to believe? And if that's true, is it all masks? Are they all the same or not? She's a surgeon. She's worn thousands of masks. She studied the literature. Now, what is important about this discussion is, with everything that she is saying, where some part of the epidemic is being challenged, she's offering peer review scientific literature to support her position. Now, in the end, you may agree or disagree with anything she has to say, but at least she has a voice and a forum. Why am I concerned? Because Facebook and Google and Twitter and all these major platforms have made it a policy that if you question any aspect of COVID, you are simply deplatformed. And then the media goes after you. And there's a major campaign to attack anyone. Well, now there's over 50,000 physicians and scientists worldwide who are challenging various aspects of the pandemic. Are the actual death certificates correct? Are their causes of death correct? Are the tests used accurate in order to make the diagnosis? Is the person who tests positive yet is healthy, is that really a case? Are they going to spread it? These are some of the questions that are being raised. And now we see that there are all forms of legitimate challenging to the official version of events. In other words, the media has protected the narrative. The politicians have protected the narrative. But the pharmaceutical industry has created it. So now she's asking us to reevaluate all these, and she's concerned about the rise of technocrats. And the technocrats are the ones who are controlling all of science today. She considers them the Trojan horse of global transformation. Again, it is not that you have to agree or disagree with her, but she's looking at statistics as a physician, as a person who's concerned. Remember, for these men and women to come forward to offer their insights means they know in advance that they are jeopardizing their career, their life's work. And for the first that came forward, they were mercilessly attacked. Professors who had never had a question about their reputation or accuracy were thrown out of universities. They could no longer publish in peer-reviewed literature, even though they had published enormous amounts. Is it best to wait for the vaccine, or can we just actually assume that the vaccine is safe and effective because someone says it? What are the actual results? Well, we are only now getting the results. And what about the drugs we knew would block corona, stop it, kill it in its tracks, so you never had to go to the hospital? You never had to worry about dying. Why is it that 100-plus studies of various commonly used safe medicines were attacked? What happened there? That just doesn't make any sense. So we see something remarkable today. Most of the people who are against some part of the COVID narrative are also positive for the vaccines. So these are not alternative people I've selected. These are orthodox people in every respect. So we see a phenomena, ultra-orthodoxy challenging ultra-orthodoxy. And Why would a person do this? Because these are professionals. These are highly educated, very disciplined people. In their world, they do their homework. And now they're seeing that they're being misled. Others are being misled. And they're just supposed to stay quiet. These people won't stay quiet. These people will stand up and, thank goodness, tens of thousands probably will be reaching within the next few months once we start seeing all the adverse side effects of the vaccines, hundreds of thousands of scientists and doctors. We've never seen this at any time in American history. Now to the guest.
You know, I started this talk, believe it or not, a year ago, before anybody heard about COVID or coronavirus. We weren't thinking along these lines. But I started thinking about how warfare had evolved in my lifetime. You know, if you want to sway geopolitical power, traditionally we've used standing armies in war. But in my generation, we've now seen the what I call warfare 4.0, where you can identify ISIS and the Taliban, for example, as a standing army by the Geneva Convention, but you're not 100% sure who's backing them. Who's the enemy, really? It's murky. So what if you could take it the next step further? And the next step is, how could you sway geopolitical power without even an identifiable army? In fact, without even identifiable war? Well, I can think that you're going to need chemists and or doctors. And I think that that's pertinent. So I've changed this topic. I started a year ago. I finished it this morning. That's the world's record for procrastination. But it's not because of that. It's because things have been changing just almost daily. Now, if you're confused, you know, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. We're all confused. It's cognitive dissonance. It's the bad, bad feeling you get when the world around you doesn't correspond to what you believe about the world to be. And I started noticing right away that when the medical technocrats, and by the way, I'm a surgeon. I'm an unemployed. I was unemployed for 6 weeks when they shut down elective surgery. And I'm not an infectious disease expert, but by the way, neither is Tony Fauci. He's an immunologist, and my one claim to fame is I fell asleep right in front of him when I was an intern at a lecture. But I watched these guys from BRICS and all these people, okay? And everything they said was wrong. Now, they were wrong about what they were telling us, and they were wrong by errors of omission, not telling us things that we knew to be helpful. And I'm talking about knowing in science for 20 years. So I can give you the benefit of doubt if you're wrong about one or two things. But when you're wrong 100% of the time consistently, that's not by accident. I mean, even the blind hog gets the acorn once in a while. So they should have come up with something in our best interest if they'd really cared about us. Now, so my talk today is really to kind of go over this technocracy, the SARS-CoV-2 and the rise of medical technocracy. And I had a brain transplant 2 years ago after reading Patrick Wood's book, and I know he came and talked to you guys. I recommend that because you won't look at the world the same again and the power structures and how things are put together. I think that's a really important book. What is technocracy? You know, technocracy is an idea, but it was an actual movement in the 20s and 30s. And it was during the Depression and things. And people thought these messy social institutions like representative government and free markets and things, that's kind of messy and we have all these problems. But now we know about engineering factories. Let's just take it a step further. Let's data gather on everybody in the world, and then let's feed it up to a non-elected board. But these board will be technocrats. They'll be smart guys. And they can engineer better solutions than the average person can. So let's just let them run things. Of course, the problem is always who's going to be in control. So what does the term technocrat come from? It comes from the Greek god Kratos. And Kratos, actually, he's a little different than the other Greek gods in the pantheon. He is the divine personification of raw power. So really what a technocrat is someone who exercises their power over you on the basis of their knowledge. And this is my own little addition to this. I would say it's power via differential knowledge. If you all know everything that I know, I can't lord it over you. But differential knowledge means I know something you don't. And so if the bookie knows the horse is lame, he can make a lot of money off you. And then he has the opportunity to give that knowledge to some of his cronies and his friends. And that's a very powerful thing in the world. Now, I believe you can see the effect of differential knowledge on this disease, because this is my blue pyramid of death. Now, If you look around the world, and maybe I'm wrong, and you can correct me if you can find somebody else, I can only find four people that I would consider in the class of the elite level lever pullers. I'm not talking about the Hollywood elites. They don't count for a lot of reasons. But I'm talking about the people that actually make the, like the IMF chief, the premier of some country. I mean, big guys. The only four I can find that died of this disease were three Iranian council members, like the Mullah's council, and a vice president of some African country. I mean, these are not the guys that go to the G7. I couldn't recite their names. They're the political red shirts. But nobody else has died, okay? And politicians, it's not just that they're small in numbers. There's a lot of guys out there that fit this category, and they're always interacting with people, and they're always traveling, from Xi Jinping going down into Wuhan. They're all over the place. So they didn't die, but doctors died. And we lost, you know, conservatively probably 600 doctors and frontline nurses when this thing first came out of China and moved into Lombardy. And in fact, that's what I tell my patients, because we're not out of this. You know, we've entered the age of viral terrorism. Whether this was meant to be a terrorist act or it's an accident or whatever you want to believe this happened, it can happen again. And we know that they've been engineering things in labs. One of the things I found is very scary. They've been engineering things in labs all over the world related to this virus and other viruses. So we're not out of this. It's like we entered the nuclear age, now we've entered the viral age. But when you know to go to ground is when doctors are dying, because when we can't save ourselves, there's a real problem. And then we lost a lot of innocent people on the bottom for lack of knowledge. Now we've got this now, in my opinion, so this is not going on anymore. The other thing I started thinking about is, remember FDR's famous line, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And I didn't realize the depth of that, really the meaning of that, until recently. Think about this. The sheepdog and the sheep. The sheepdog never touches the sheep. He doesn't push the sheep into the pen, right? The sheep don't know, because they don't have the knowledge, and they're too stupid to get the knowledge, that the dog is just making a lot of noise and running around and barking and scaring them. If they knew that, they could ignore him, right? But they don't. They're afraid. So they get themselves into a little scrum, and they confine themselves to the pen. That's the power of fear. And I think we're seeing that today. The other thing that FDR said, which is profound, is, and very pertinent to this, in politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. And let me just say, I'm going to give you a scientific talk. I'm going to demonstrate, I'm going to beat you over the head with the evidence against mask wearing and this whole thing. But don't think you can separate it from politics. Since the dawn of man, we've had two things that have been with us forever, illness and politics, and they're not completely separable. Now, I'm going to go through several lies that we've been told, and one is the death risk. And our speaker last night was excellent, and Dr. Happer went over this, so I'm going to kind of skim some of this. But what do you want to know when a disease comes out? And Steve isn't here today, but when I have a problem, like when SARS came out, I texted Steve Hatfield, and I say, should I be worried about this? He said, nah. And the next time, when MERS came out, should I be worried about this? Nah. Well, this time I tried to text him, and he was some jungle in Borneo or something, but I got a hold of Jane, and she said, yeah, you should be worried about this one. So anyway, that's what you want to know. You're sitting on your porch in Oklahoma, and what's your real risk of dying from this? Now, I looked, there's a lot of massageable numbers, but what is hard to massage is the total deaths and the total number of people. So I'm just looking at death per capita. If you look at this year, and this data is a couple weeks old, 709,000 deaths worldwide in 7.8 billion people. Now that equates to 0.009%, but let's put it in another way. Let's flip that around. That means that you sitting on random chance have a 99.991% of surviving this. Okay, I'll take those odds to that bookie, even if he's crooked. Now, the last big flu epidemic that they said was so bad, we lost about 650,000 people in America, or in the worldwide, and that was 0.008%. So the difference between surviving this year at 99.991% is 99.992%. Who would think that's a big deal, right? Why are we in our basements? Why are we doing all this? Why have we shut down the bars, most importantly? Now, I looked around, now this is not an exhaustive list, but I looked around various different areas in the world, because the second thing you want to ask yourself is where's the safest place to be, right? Well, I can tell you the most unsafe place to be is in New York. They have the highest death per capita I can find in the world. Yet they got the award from Tony Fauci for their wonderful COVID response. Go figure. Now, ironically, the best place in the world is a sub-Saharan third world country. You know, I have two patients. I chose these things for fun. Now, I work in Nebraska, so it's 0.014%. But that's orders of magnitude worse than Nigeria and Senegal. Now, I have patients from those places, and I've talked to them. And what they said to me is, you know, the government may have talked about, you know, isolating and shutting down and all that stuff, but they didn't do anything. We don't shut down. We just kept going. Our families are there. They just pretended like nothing happened. And what's the difference? And by the way, the yellow countries on that list are countries that did nothing really for shutting down, and the white countries are the ones that went to general quarters, basically. So what's the difference? Well, in Senegal and Nigeria, I know for sure, and I think, and this is true in India and most places where malaria is endemic, you can go to the corner drugstore and buy chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine in some places over the counter. So they're used to dealing with febrile illness. When they get a fever for a couple days, they go down the corner store, they get their chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, they take it for 5 days. That's why nobody's dying over there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Now, if I just this is my own, I copied the graphs from the World Health Organization, the CDC, in Sweden. And if you look at it, the yellow doesn't show up, sadly, very well on the screen, but that there's a faint yellow line, and that's the Sweden death curve. And it doesn't really seem to me much different than all those others from SARS, H1N1 in 2009, and influenza of 2012. So this is a seasonal death pattern. This is a seasonal death curve with a slightly longer offshoot. But they're not letting you know that. And again, this is one of those things that the technocrats should be comforting us. They should be telling us, listen, we were worried when this came up, like I was, but as soon as we started seeing it go down like every other seasonal disease, we can now breathe a sigh of relief. We know how to treat this. We know how to prevent it. Just go about your work. Let's open up the country and get back onto life. That's the red curve, that's a couple months old. It's way lower now. But that's not what they did. What did they do? They started talking about, oh my gosh, the cases are on the rise. And that's the blue curve. Let's all run around. The sky's falling. The cases are going up. And, you know, in good newspeak fashion, they've redefined the term cases. From time of Hippocrates till 2019, a case was a sick person. We didn't talk about a pneumonia case. A case of pneumonia was somebody who was sick with pneumonia. It wasn't somebody that had some arbitrary test of some antibody to a pneumonia. Okay, but that's what they're doing. And so they're testing people and they're calling them cases. That is not epidemiology, that's fraud. The testing, by the way, the only test we have for this that is got benchmarks is the CDC research test, and that's not the one you would get if you went out to anybody in America, hospital, doctor's office, or stand in line in Florida and got your test. What you're getting are tests that have no benchmarks. We don't know the false positive, the false negative, we can't do a predictive value. That's not science, it's not even, it's just crazy. The testing also, they add on, and I know in some states, if you show up positive and you tell them that I was in a bar last night, they'll add another 16 to the caseload. Again, that's not even stupidity, that's fraud. You know, by the way, I got to move on, but that's the point. And everybody's heard the story, and I've had my office manager went to the Libertarian meeting in Florida this year, and his friend went to get tested, stood in line, signed in, stood in line, got the positive result when he never got a test because he dropped out of line, didn't get the test, but he was called and got a positive result. And if you know people and if you talk to enough people, I've heard that story 10, 12 times now, all over the country. So there's other things at work here. Well, what's the upshot? The upshot is we're terrorizing people, okay, for no good reason. Now, the funny thing is, the older people, you know, like me, I'm 67. I've learned to be skeptical of the government and whatever. But these young generation that didn't grow up, they grew up somewhat innumerate due to our public health or public education system, they believe, they surveyed them, Oxford, Harvard, and Università Bocconi, surveyed the colonial or the COVID millennials, and they think 2% of their own generation will die of this. And that is so far wrong. I mean, that's 10, 100, 1,000, that's 10,000 times more than the reality, because Canada showed it was 0.0006% of them are affected fatally with this. And look at the deaths, and we only had 944 in this country, but look, every year, the biggest risk to young people are accidents. So it's just completely out of proportion to reality. Now I'm going to talk about mask wearing, and this is the thing. I was so excited when Dr. Harper last night said that he talked about the Manchu cue, because I've been saying this is a symbol. This is just a symbol of submission. It's not scientifically sound. Why are we doing it? And he explained it to me in that one slide. The Manchu cue, it's a symbol of submission. And you were in the authority and you're not. So anyway, this is why it's so important to understand the reality of masks. Now I'm going to get into the real scientific literature, but I want to show you a graphic. This somebody sent me as a text. You may have seen it. This is a good graphic. Now this is an ear loop mask. That's what this homeopathic piece of junk is that we're all, that many of us are wearing, that just goes over the ears like that. Now this is a guy who went to do some drywalling, sheetrock, and the sheetrock particles are 10 microns. Coronavirus is 0.1 microns. If that gets into your nose at 10 microns, do you really think this is doing absolutely anything to protect you against a virus? And it's not. And this is, Dr. Donaparthy brought me this slide, you know, from his hospital. This is a box of these masks, the hospital masks, which, by the way, I never put one on until this. I live in masks. I'm a surgeon. I never saw one of these in the hospital until now. But anyway, it says right on the box, this does not provide any protection against COVID or any other viruses. Of course it doesn't, because it's about size. Size does matter. And here we have the coronavirus, and you'll see different terms of size, but let's talk about microns. I think in microns, and that's what these masks are. That's what one of the you can convert everything easily to microns. So the most best mask we have in the hospital for average use, short of a biocontainment suit, which we don't have, is made for tuberculosis, and it's an N95 mask tested to 0.3 microns, which means it screens out 95% of the particles coming through, not 100%, but 95% of the particles down to 0.3 microns. But coronavirus, influenza, rhinovirus, adenoviruses, all these little upper respiratory viruses are 0.1 microns, roughly, 0.1, and there are even some smaller. I think adenovirus is 0.8 or 0.08. Smallpox is a little bigger, but again, one of the reasons it violates my Hippocratic oath to wear this in front of anybody is to suggest to patients that this is helpful. Because if something like smallpox came around that's 60% fatal, not 0.006, but 60% fatal, the stuff that we have in the bioweapons labs around the world, you don't think masks are going to save you. That's where you need to go to ground unless we find out that we can treat it. These are really for TB and other reasons, which I'm going to show you. So let me just review this slide on masks. The guy, and I have to have a mask when I go into Costco, and any of these will work. That's why I'm kind of pissed off at Costco, and I've got this thing up there. If you're a surgeon or a technician or something, this is the mask I wear all the time, the guy in blue. It does one thing. It protects you from the environment. Blood doesn't hit me in the mouth, and I don't drool or drop snot, which is a medical term, onto the sterile field. Now, the bottom mask, that woman in that kind of duckbill thing, that's an N95 mask. And let me just point out, this is how it works. This is why it's so nonsensical that those masks on the right could possibly work. To even get this rated mask to screen you out against a 0.3 micron or 3 micron tuberculosis mycobacterium, here's how you have to have it done. An infectious disease nurse decides what size mask you have, because these things come in sizes like shoe sizes. Then she teaches you how to put it on so you're completely hermetically sealed around your mouth and nose. And then when you take it off, you're taught how to take, you know from sterile technique, we know how to take it off so we don't contaminate ourselves with whatever accreted on the outside of the mask. You know that the average person couldn't do that, and these masks are not comfortable to wear. You have to kind of build up to it. Like, I can wear that other mask for 24 hours, but this one, you'd kind of have to get used to it. And we're going to talk some more about that in the next studies, but this one above it, this is one of my favorites. It's the OSHA N95 mask. Now, those are not the same. All N95 masks are not the same. The OSHA is for industry. It is for the guy doing sheetrock or asbestos or whatever. And this isn't even put on right. You can see it's supposed to be pushed down so it fits around your nose. But if it's put on right, it'll screen 95% of the particulate matter coming in. But it's a one-way valve, guys, so it just blows everything out all over you. So you're not doing it for the safety of others in Costco by wearing one of those masks. Oops, wrong thing. Now, I'm shocked at the absolute fraud that is being perpetrated on us about this by actually, and this is one I think I've discovered, and I'm going to continue to run this aground after I leave this meeting. But I ran into an acquaintance of mine who's a teacher, high school teacher. And I said, we were talking, and I said, you know, I've reviewed the world's literature on masks. Trust me, they don't work. And he said, oh, I can look at a paper. You can say that, but I can find for every paper you can find like that, I'll find a paper that tells you that masks work, right? Well, you know, you guys are science. You know that it's not about a vote. Like Michael Crichton said, it's not taking a vote in a room. If it's consensus, it's not science. If it's science, it's not consensus. That's actually what he said. But it's also not about counting papers. It's about the quality of the evidence and the predictability of your conclusions, right? Can you predict the future, like Dr. Soon's new model? It helps to be able to say, I can predict the future. Well, these guys, this is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. This is a prestigious journal, right? And this is a very suspicious publication. First of all, I will tell you that humidity, and I'll show you a thing, but I don't have time today to prove all this. That could be a whole lecture on itself. What really stops viral transmission? And when you look at all the facts from school schedules and all the different things, it's humidity. It's absolute humidity that changes your infectivity rate. This is a very detailed paper, and it, on superficial blush, it looks really sciencey and good, right? But I first became kind of questioning it when they're purporting to prove that masks work using New York City as an ideal model. And I just showed you, New York City is the death central for this. I mean, it's the worst place in the world. So what are they going to show me? And the other thing I noticed right away is I looked at the references. I don't think they expect you to do that. When you look at the references, you find out there are all these bizarre references that have absolutely nothing to do with the precursors of anything you would look at to do this kind of research, right? Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I've been looking at a lot of science literature lately, and maybe it's changing, but most of the time when you read a science paper, the first thing you see is an abstract. And then you see, you know, the paper itself, the body of the paper. This one, before the abstract, there was a paragraph that said significance, and in it said, it made a point that our work highlights the necessity that sound science is essential in decision-making for the current and future public health pandemics. And that just rang like one of those talking points of the narrative in ABC News. Sound, we gotta have sound science. But what I just figured out, like in the hotel here, looking at this, when you start, you know, in the modern world, in the computer, you can touch people's names and it gives you their bibliography of what other papers they've written. What, you know, because I wanted to know, who are these guys that wrote this paper? And I found Wan Wang, however you pronounce it, he's not a doctor, he's not an epidemiologist, he's not a master of public health, nothing to do with public health. He is in the Division of Planetary and Geologic Sciences at Caltech. Do you know him?
Go back to the one you showed before. Rang Yi Jiang and Mario Molina. These are really super activists. Mario Molina got the Nobel Prize for this photon host lies. And then this guy, Zhang, is actually a lightning expert.
But what are they activists in?
Sorry?
They're activists in...
Well, in promoting all this environment.
Okay, well then I'm not wrong, because these guys don't have the background to be writing this paper.
No.
At all. Oh, good, I'm not crazy. Okay, good. Because I read some of the names of the papers they wrote. And I'm a doctor, I read medical journals all the time. Touchdown, man, I feel good now. But I read these things and I'm thinking, why are we hearing about masks from the guy who wrote a paper called Plasmon-Induced Transparency in Metamaterials? Really? Or Enhance the Optic Absorption of Nanocrystalline Titanium Dioxide Film, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is not right. So this is a fraudulent article. But here's their evidence. This is the so-called evidence, okay? They show you this graph, and this is New York City, and they say, now look, obviously social distancing didn't work, because see the upswing? And then, oh, yes, stay at home work, because see, now we see the flattening of the curve. And then, of course, masks work, because look, we see the curve dropping out there. Okay? Now, I'm superimposing right now. That's my Swedish death curve. Do you see a difference? I mean, I don't. To me, this curve that they have and my curve, it's a little difference because of the time frame, but it's basically that downslope is the downslope of a seasonal respiratory virus. So this is a made-up, very, very sophisticated made-up fraud, I think. Now, the others are not so sophisticated. They're pushing this mask agenda on these popular science kind of what I call fluff pieces. And they have good words that get your attention. So the headline of this in USA Today is fact check. Okay, I'm not going to give you any BS. I'm going to give you facts, fact check. Ear loop masks, even homemade cloth masks, offer protection against COVID. That's the title. But when you read the paper, the very best thing they can say about this is, quote, they may be helpful in non-patient settings to contain coughs and to remind people not to touch their face, but they're not suitable for providing medical care to patients, i.e., let me translate, this doesn't work, okay? And personally, I'm offended that you're going to ask me to be mandated to wear a mask so I don't touch my face. I like to touch my face, and I don't think you should be able to mandate that away, you know? Now, here's one. Dr. Monica Gandhi, I don't know from Adam, she is, in fact, an infectious disease expert, though, at UCSF. She was just, by the way, appointed to the board of the NIAID with Anthony Fauci. And so they interviewed her. So they find these people through whatever source that have gravitas, and they ask them about masks. And she said, well, by having a mask over your face, it filters out the majority of viral particles. So even if you do get exposed to COVID, you're going to get very little virus in, and if you do get COVID, you'll get less sick. Now, I'm going to say that sounds really good. It's like the thing we heard of Thomas Sowell. The best evidence for masks is it sounds good. The worst evidence is it doesn't work, you know. That sounds good to the casual observer, but that's not the way it works, and she should know that because this is her literature. So, and this is only one paper that goes through this, but quite frankly, the trend in viral research is they once did think you needed a bigger viral load, because one of the problems is when you test on humans, you have to squirt stuff in their nose. It's hard to make it down. But they now believe that one virion will infect you on many of these, and they can actually calculate it for certain influenza, they think one droplet, and there's kind of a communication problem with the term droplet. It's not something you can see. Droplet is actually a nuclear type size, like the size of a nucleus. You can't see it, it's microscopic. And only 6.6 adenovirus particles are required. So you can't screen that out. That's the idea that this is going to make you less sick. No, it's your immune system that moderates what happens once you get infected that decides whether you're going to be sick or not. I'm going to show you that later. So she's wrong about that. Now, the other proof that she's wrong, these are journal articles before all this. I went back before all this started because you got to get out of all this political nightmare and go back to when people didn't care about what the answer was. They just wanted the truth. And it was between 2010, 2017, there were these four articles published. None of them show any benefit from wearing a mask, either for healthcare workers or community members and households. In other words, if your family gets the flu and you put on a mask, will it help you? No, it does not. And there's no protection against N95 masks against flu, and there's no difference. Here's the kicker. There's no difference between N95 respirators and surgical masks. So I showed you that the N95 is that very difficult to put on, very occlusive mask, and the surgical masks are open to the air. If what she said was right about the number of particles, then there should be a difference between those two, and there's not. So again, that's a made-up idea that she had, good thinking, but it wasn't right. American Journal of Infection Control in 2009, face mask was not demonstrated to prevent colds. So this is another virus. This is adeno and rhinovirus primarily. And masks help, but people wearing N95 masks were more apt to get a headache. And it's not the oxygen probably, it's you're recycling, you're increasing the CO2 behind the mask. And we know that can give you headaches. Here's one done in an actual lab, and they looked at how they actually test the masks, okay? And they use these MS2 virions, which is not infectious, but it simulates the effect. It's the size of a virus, or whatever. And they show that even these N95 respirators may not provide proper protection against a virus, which is considerably smaller than the accepted penetrating particle size of 0.3 microns used in certifying tests, and that the MS2 virions went right through the surgical masks. No question about that. And then this just shows the same thing. It's the small, and this is key, that it's the small particles that are the most transmissible and the most likely to infect you. So of course when you cough, oh, by the way, that isn't even true yet. Let me just point this out. We learn in the operating room how, when you're a medical student, how to wear a mask and how to, it's surgical room etiquette, right? So what do you do when you sneeze? You know, you ever wondered that, what surgeons do when you sneeze in the OR? Well, yeah, you can't do that. So what you do, this is why it doesn't even, what do they tell you? They tell you, well, we know it doesn't screen out all the particles, but it stops all that junk from your coughs and sneezes. No, it doesn't, because here's what they tell you in medical training. when you're at the operating table and you're the medical student holding the retractor, say, and you think you have to sneeze, don't do this because it blows out the side of your mask and you'll blow right onto the surgical field. So what you're taught to do is to lean back and just sneeze straight ahead. So you just blow it on your compadre, but you don't contaminate the surgical field. But we know it blows out the side, and if you've ever been next to somebody in the surgery suite, you can tell that. So this is, again, nonsense. It's not, as Winston Churchill will say, it's nonsense up with which I will not put. So here's this guy in this highly, I mean, this is the Maryland Institute of Advanced Environmental Health, and I believe them more than I believe somebody off the street, even if they've got an infectious disease degree. They're showing that the small particles readily go through the mask, and that if you cough or sneeze, you exceed the airspeed that the mask can contain anyway. If you're going to read one article to convince you one way or another about masks, I'd read this guy. He's awesome. Dennis Rancourt is a PhD in physics, and he talks about what happens to small particles, and he shows that small particles, these very, very tiny two or less micron particles, are part of air fluidity. So essentially, every time, they don't settle by gravity, they bounce off the walls and keep floating around. And I'm actually going to show you a video here in a minute. So even, he says, even a momentary misfit of the mask renders the whole thing entirely irrelevant. So I love it. You go down to the casino here and you see people, what are they doing? They've got their masks like this so they can smoke. Okay, this is not going to keep this from happening. If any of them are infected, and I'm not worried about that, by the way, I'd sit next to them. But if any of them are infected, that virus is going around. It's going into the vents. That's the way this works. That's why we don't worry about it every year. We never tried this kind of support. Oppressive global shutdown over this thing before. So now this is my favorite one and my last one, because this is from the CDC itself. And this is looking at influenza, but keep in mind, influenza is slightly less, apparently, looking at the R-naught values and what happened. It looks like it may be even less transmissible than this virus, so it should be more containable. And when they looked at three things, hand washing, they looked at decontaminating your environment, like that toxic stuff they put on the grocery things now, and a mask. And none of them made a difference in the transmission of viruses, in days lost from work, and medical people, etc. They really ran this to ground. And here, somebody sent me this one on the right. They said, this is what virologists wear to protect themselves from a virus, but don't worry, your bandana will work too. So I said, well, okay, maybe this is real, maybe it's not. I think it's probably true, but let's just see what they really do. And I found the picture of the Wuhan virus lab where they do corona research is on the bottom. That is the actual lab, and that's actually what they wear. And on the top is the Winnipeg lab. That actually, I was asking Willie how to pronounce it, that actually might be Dr. Xi, who's at the heart of a lot of the things that happened here. And this is where she or somebody's working on the coronavirus. They were doing gain-of-function research at that lab and in Wuhan and in North Carolina and various other places. But here's what you really need to know, and it's probably the only thing you need to know, okay? If, you know, our politicians will save themselves to the nth degree, and if you think that they thought this was a deadly disease and they could be saved by masks, they'd be masked up to the yin-yang, but they just exempted themselves, okay? And as did the Wisconsin governor. So mandates are only for us little people. Now, social distancing is the same kind of junk, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but, you know, this is a poster, and I just like these things. Years ago, my hospital got those, this is 10 years ago now, they got those waterless hand cleaners. I don't have a problem with that, but they put a sign above it, and they said, this will stop influenza transmission by 50%. All this literature wasn't always worked out by then, but I looked at my nurse at the clinic and I said, that is BS. It's a made up number. That's not the kind of number you get from science. And how do they even do that? You know, immediately you know it's not right. It's just, this is the common sense that Dr. Happ talked about. So at 6 feet, I just love the little, kind of this, you got in black, you see all these little droplets, and then you see this little, how they magically disappear before the 6 feet, and that's just not what happens. So this is an actual researcher. This is a gal, Lydia Baruba. She's a PhD in MIT, and this was published in JAMA. And she first of all realized that no studies had actually been done to look at the droplet dispersal and the gas cloud when you breathe, right? And she's a physicist. She's a fluid dynamicist. I think that's in the Department of Physics. So anyway, and she showed that the peak exhalation speeds can reach up to 100 feet per second, which does exceed the mask, by the way. And this is just breathing. And you create a cloud that can span approximately 27 feet. So, and I'm going to tell you, while this is playing, let me tell you about, this is just some of her studies. And this is, it shows you the feet. You're at 43 inches now, but hang on, it'll keep going. Anybody that understands, which obviously Tony Fauci does not, the real history of infectious disease and smallpox. The smallpox killed more people in the 20th century than all the wars put together. And it's highly contagious and airborne. And here's the story of the last person to get smallpox in Germany. He came from Pakistan and he was very sick. But they hadn't seen smallpox for a couple decades in Germany, so they really didn't recognize it as smallpox. But they knew he had something bad. They put him in an isolation ward, way down at the end of the ward. So what happened first is that, a couple things happened, but what the upshot is against medical advice, he opened his window and he breathed. He wasn't coughing or sneezing. That's not part of smallpox. He was just breathing. They proved by smoke studies. His breath went out the window. This is in the cold German winter. Breath went out the window, down onto the ground, across the way to the next wing, up a couple stories and killed six student nurses. That is infectious disease transmission, and you cannot stop it as much as you might think this is good. Let's all carry a rabbit's foot, as I had the picture up. It's the same deal. Now, the biggest lie in this whole thing, and the thing that really has got me exercised over this whole issue, and I want you to think about, we all know, quite frankly, I've treating some people now with COVID. I've got about 20 patients that I do telemedicine on because they can't find another doctor to do it, and a patient of mine knew that how I felt about this. Now, everybody that's treating these patients knows this works. Everybody, okay? So this is not, the university boys can hem and haw about there's no double-blind 30-year studies and there's all this stuff going on, but I want you to keep in mind, not so much whether you not believe it works or not, but the resistance to the people that say it works. Just listen to what goes on here. So, of course, Dr. Fauci said there's no magic drug, we don't have anything to know about this, this is in April, and then in May, there's no evidence hydroxychloroquine works against CCP virus. Now, I'm not trying to be rude to Dr. Fauci when I ask if he's got dementia, but this is his own people. This is the CDC itself publishing data that shows that chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS. This was after the 2004 SARS. And this was in a public journal. If you're going to be the expert, then be the expert. You need to read your own literature. So this is in 2005. And he himself said that, and he's not incompetent. He himself said, he was talking about MERS now. We don't have to start designing new drugs. The next time someone comes into an emergency room in Qatar or Saudi Arabia, you'd have drugs that are readily available. And he said he would use it. There's no thorough archive, trials, but no official trials, but we know it works and I would use it if there was nothing, to see. Now, what really got my mind thinking about motive here and what's really going on is this article, 2006, In Vitro Inhibition of Human Influenza A Virus Replication by Chloroquine. Okay, now this shows it was overwhelming proof that it inhibited influenza A. Now, what do they tell you? Take your flu shot because 80,000 people died last year of influenza. Now, they actually died of influenza-like illness, but I'll credit them and they died of a viral disease. Okay, are you telling me that in 2006, they knew that we could have a treatment for it and they didn't pursue it? Okay? Think about that. Now, here's another article going back even further. And quite frankly, you can find papers on lysosomotropic agents. That's what these are, because the way they work is they acidify the lysosome. So that's not something I'm not an expert on this part of it, but I don't think it's something that you can easily, it's not like bacteria develop resistance to antibiotics. That's from a totally different mechanism. This is the equivalent of acid rain to the fish in the Canadian lakes. You can't adapt to certain things. And I don't think we're going to see quick adaptation to any of these drugs. That's why chloroquine's been so effective for so many years. But anyway, effects of chloroquine on all sorts of viral infections. So this isn't just about letting people potentially die of influenza we could have saved. This is hepatitis C. This is HIV. This is a bunch of stuff. Okay? Now, Henry Ford Hospital found out that they could get a 51% reduction in deaths if the hydroxychloroquine was begun within 24 hours of admission to a hospital. They asked for emergency a dispensation from the FDA, and I think they're still waiting. I love Vladimir Zelenko. I've never met him, but he's a hero in my mind. This guy, he calls himself a small-town country doctor. I think he's in Queens. But when everybody was dying in New York, he got to his research library, and he started looking around, and he said, all I'm doing is repurposing old drugs in a new modern way. And he combined three drugs that had shown some efficacy against viral illness, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc. and first 500 patients, no hospitalizations, no death, 100% recovery. Now, for his great heroic efforts and good thinking, he was criticized by his community leaders for spreading disinformation about their community, like they're all getting infected. And he was, you know, he was thought to be a Trump conspiracy theorist by the media. And worst of all, the Baltimore federal prosecutor was investigating his statement that hydroxychloroquine was FDA approved. It is FDA approved. You don't go back once things are FDA approved and reapprove them for a new indication. Here's Dr. Raoul in France. This is 1,061 patients. Now, he is an academic guy that just, I think, kind of takes names and doesn't take a lot of crap from people. But he had 973 people resolved out of that 1063 and only 5 deaths. And he was able to publish this in the New England Journal of Medicine. But the response, now look at the worldwide response to this. One of the things that happened is, first of all, you had all the talking heads say these don't work, it doesn't work, it's all propaganda, it's just Trump saying this, whatever. But we've got a new level of fake papers. Now, I just showed you the one about the mask, but they caught other people. Nobody's talked about that one, but they've caught these guys. There were the Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine are two of the top journals in the world for medicine, and they had papers published saying that they had looked at the world data of hospitalized patients and hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. That was the conclusion. And they had all sorts of stuff. And they got their data from a company called Surgisphere. Well, it turns out that Surgisphere was all a big scam. It wasn't that they, you know, we all know of scientific data that's been massaged, or they actually lied about or something, or they didn't do what they said they did in the protocols. But what this was is, this is a new level. They just made up the data set. They totally made up the data set, because Surgisphere actually was a company that only had 6 employees on paper, probably less, and the guy they claimed was the science writer was actually a science fiction writer. And then their big, this is like Snopes, if you know who actually Snopes are, and then the researcher was actually an adult content model. Just, you know, this just gets wilder and wilder. I mean, okay, so in response to that, some other good people got online, and they have an open architecture research thing still going. You can, it's called hctrial.com. You can look at all the data yourself. But they clearly showed, they said, hey, we're doing a natural experiment here. There was all these countries that use hydroxychloroquine early and are comfortable with it, and then there's these countries that are dragging their feet. Let's see, they don't use it. Let's see what the difference is. And you can see, if you're lucky enough to live in one of those countries that use it, you have an 88.3 death per million, whereas if you're in the United States and other places, you're 649.4 death per million. And here's just the I think Steve Hatfield extracted from this, but this is the bottom, the lines on the bottom are the countries using early widespread hydroxychloroquine, and the others are not hydroxychloroquine. But here's what happened to them. Immediately, just the other day, this is 8/7, we suddenly started receiving malicious personal doxing, hacking, and DDoS attacks, you know, denial of service, and were unavailable for some time while we work on forensic analysis and personal safety. Okay, and by the way, because I'm saying all this, Jeffrey Epstein didn't commit suicide, and I'm not suicidal either. If anything happens to me, I want you to prosecute somebody. Here's just a comparison I won't go through completely, but look at the cost. Tony Fauci wants us to use remdesivir at $3,600 to treat somebody to completion. Hydroxychloroquine is about 50 cents a pill, so you can cure somebody for $20. It's not that big a deal. So why not embrace hydroxychloroquine? And the answer is, I think they're a couple. Now, this is the one that first hit me. Well, we have a $69 billion vaccine industry that is predicated on a lie. And this is a lie that was told to me as a medical student, well, maybe not as a medical student, but they may not know it in 1980, but as a resident, they should have gotten this. My son didn't know it, who just got done with his general surgery residency. My friend in academic medicine 40 years didn't know it, that we had a potential for treating viruses. Okay, if you can treat the disease with an easy, safe medicine, you don't need to be vaccinating the whole world. So that $69 billion could go to zero tomorrow. That's a motive to cover this up. The other thing is, and maybe they're just covering it up because they realize it's going to come out that they let people die to support this vaccine industry. I think that's part of it. The other thing is, you can't terrorize a whole world with designer viruses if we know how to treat them. So what really matters, the other thing, this is a lie by omission. They didn't tell us what really matters. I kept saying, when this came across and all these people were dying, I said, it's a bimodal disease. It's like most people just get a little sick and walk away from this, and some people get deathly ill and die. What's the difference in those people? And don't just tell me all the comorbidities of diabetes. That's just hypertension and obesity. That just goes for almost anything you want to say. What really matters? We've spent billions of dollars on our CDC to prevent diseases, and what do? They did nothing about this. Fortunately, Indonesia did, and they looked at over 700 cases in their hospital and who was actually ending up in the ICU and dying. It was people with low vitamin D levels. So if you had a D level over 30, your chance of dying, even if you got hospitalized with COVID, was less than 4%. Now, you had to have a level over 30 to really be protective, and you can't get that from the sun. So you need to take I take 10,000 units a day. I've been taking it for years of D3 over the counter. It's cheap, it's effective. Everybody should do it. So if I have time, I'm just going to go through quickly what's really going on here. I mean, this can't just be a virus. We're treating this virus it's just a worse seasonal virus than some years, but not as worse as others, if you go back far enough. Well, is it just about money? Well, cui bono. You know, Bill Gates actually, before this all came out, this should be kind of an interesting follow-up. These two guys that are researchers that have testified before Congress found out that Bill Gates or his minions, somebody, they met with Congressman Rush, Democrat from Illinois, in Rwanda in August, before this was ever thought of. This was last year, in 2019. And they negotiated a deal to do contact tracing for this virus. And they've got the contact tracing and whatever, the Trace Act, okay? And for those of you that may think there's an evil work at a higher power here, I have to say it's kind of, you can't make this up. I mean, the number of the congressional bill is HR 6666. I don't know what to say about that. But in any case, they did this, they're going to get $100 billion out of this. Now, the U.S. government's already bought 100 million dollar vaccine doses from Pfizer. That's 1.95 billion, and it's going to be a lot more. 100 million doesn't cover the whole world, and they want to cover the whole world with this vaccine. We've seen this happen before. Big Pharma, they funded the European Scientific Working Group on Influenza in 2009. They issued a pandemic alert that caused all the governments to buy these vaccines and not just the vaccines, but these antivirals to stock up for the pandemic next time, which turned out to not work, and their countries got kind of pissed off about that, but. They made $7 to $10 billion in profit, and then they funneled some back to the ESWI. It's an incestuous kind of keep the money rolling. But I don't think it's just money. I got to say honestly, okay, you can say what you think, but I just don't think it's money. And I kind of look at the world like this. I'm a libertarian. I don't think about Republicans and Democrats and left and right and fascism and communism. I just think, look, what happened here and which way did it take us? Did it take us on the road to totalitarianism or to freedom? To, you know, slavery, to anarchy? And this is anarchy, the dog carrying his own leash across the road. I think this is the video. This is the optic I'm going to remember for the rest of my life about this period of time. Because look at this. How pathetic is this? In 4 months, we've got young, healthy men being told to stand in a circle by their government, and they're doing it. You know, I mean, I was raised in the generation that protested the wars, and my dad was the generation that fought, you know, that went out and fought at the beaches of Normandy. And these guys are standing in a circle because the government told them they might have a small risk of dying and they need to do this for everybody's safety. Boy, is this, you know, Ben Franklin's point about turning over your liberty for a little bit of safety. Doesn't work. I just throwing this in, I just found this the other day. Peter Chalka, you know what he calls this? I've got to take this on. You know, you've heard the Kung Flu and all this kind of names for it, but he says we're in a flu d'etat. Isn't that great? I think we're in a flu d'etat. And I was just telling somebody, if you think this is all just conspiracy theory, keep in mind where that term comes from. It comes from the CIA, who put it out to dampen down the concerns about the Warren Commission report. And they said, don't argue the details with them. Just call everybody a crazy conspiracy theorist. It'll all go away. And that was their most successful CIA program, as far as I can determine. Now, this is Albert Biederman, and Albert Biederman is a psychologist. And after the Korean War, he was asked to look at victims, or actually troops coming back that had been, you know, turned. In other words, they thought the Chinese had turned them into enemies of our state. And they said, how did the Chinese do that? Do they have voodoo or some kind of pill or something they're giving them? He said, no, it's just basic psychological techniques of getting people to submit to your will and do your bidding. Okay? And what were those techniques? He made a chart of coercion, and what they assist first is isolation. Okay? I'm not going to go through the details, but you can read them. Isolation. They done them The monopolization of perception, think of the 24-hour news cycle and censorship, and when you're stuck at home, that's all you got to look at. Degradation. We now call people that decide the masks are not useful and they want to go to the beach in Florida, which is the best place to be, COVIDiots. And people like Eminem, that I don't care at all about, is going to degrade people on his rap tracks, you know, spitting on people that don't wear masks, that kind of thing. Induced ability, though, is a big deal. And I bet you we don't know how many people have died from this. My friend, who was a Vietnam vet who didn't spend a time on the desk, he was a year out in combat, and he survived that, but he almost died of not COVID, but of being locked up. And the reason is because he's elderly, and people didn't bring him food, and he didn't go out and socialize and go have lunch with his ex-wife and things. And so he got dehydrated, ended up in the hospital and the nursing home, and he barely made it out of there. Then there's in the chart of coercion, you need to threaten people, and we're certainly having that. I'm being threatened, I think, with bankruptcy for my business because it's an elective kind of business in medicine. And you have to, if you're the torturer, you're supposed to demonstrate omnipotence. Well, I think shutting down the whole world demonstrates their omnipotence. And then enforcing trivial demands. Have you seen these poker tables down here? Dear God, it's just disgusting. Thank you very much.
Something to consider, whether you agree or disagree with any part of this. This is important information. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.